intellects, vast, cool, and unsympathetic, regarded this earth with envious eyes and slowly and surely drew their plans against us.
Hello, everybody out there in the land of listening to podcasts. This is a PC Invasion podcast. Now, the number one rule of podcasting, the golden rule of podcasting, is you must always be consistent with your podcast scheduling. Tim McDonald, do you feel we've adhered to that rule of podcasting successfully?
No.
No.
In a word. No. Things have been a bit scatty the past few weeks, which
Agreed.
A little bit ironic, actually, because normally the hold-up for doing the podcast was Paul, and now
I know
Paul
it turns
isn't
out
around.
We were the problem.
No, we weren't the problem until Paul stopped doing the podcast because he's really busy with other stuff, and then we've just kind of gone, should we do a podcast today? Because, you know, we can do it whenever, because we don't have to wait
pretty
for
much.
Paul. So it's just like, should we do a podcast? I'm trying to get this done, actually. Okay, maybe tomorrow.
I'm doing a game, and then, tomorrow I'll have this other thing, so... But see, well, I'm planning ahead, because I thought, right, looking ahead, I've got Divinity Original Sin 2... be doing something with that tomorrow, so like podcast isn't gonna happen then.
Aren't you fucking
then? I'll probably
fancy.
Be writing about that, so then that isn't gonna happen then either. So we're doing it now, doing it right now, live. I mean, it's live at the moment.
Well,
it's talking.
It's live for us.
It is currently 2:49 p.m. Pacific U.S. time.
It is currently 22:49 UK time.
That's a fascinating time-related chat here.
It is.
Tim, you just showed me a list of Steam games, because, you know, let's talk about spreadsheets. That's exciting, too. Just showed me a list of Steam games where the review scores have dramatically changed due to their new sort of filtering policy that they've implemented with customer-based reviews, where... Correct me if I'm wrong, the basis is basically you have to have bought the game on Steam itself for your review to count towards the weighted score. Therefore, any keys redeemed, they won't count towards the score.
Pretty much. You can still write a review, it just won't count towards the very positive, mostly positive, mixed, whatever thing.
And their reasoning, which I think to a degree is fair reasoning. There were quite a few instances that they've studied internally and have also been reported on in the press variously, where to boost their score on Steam, some unscrupulous types have either just given away a shitload of keys or paid some people basically to go, yeah, this game's really good, have a great score, and they're trying to get rid of as many of those as possible. But they've done it in the typical Valve Steam way, which is just a massive sweeping automated change which solves the problem but also kind of impacts other people at the same time, which is a bit unfortunate, but that's how they roll, Tim. That's the Valve way.
Yeah, that is basically Valve. You don't really do customer communication or try to think things through until after you've already done it.
In their defense, they probably don't have enough staff to comb through every game on Steam.
Well, no.
Trying to gauge the legitimacy of each review. Yet, equally, they don't want a bunch of games with fake reviews on their system. So.
Indeed.
Anyway, this big old spreadsheet is kind of interesting.
I've
heard of hardly any of the games on it.
Yeah, I haven't heard of many of them, though. It is kind of interesting when you look at a few of them. The one at the very top, this spreadsheet is courtesy of Steam Spy, I should add.
Yeah, you can read it by going to their site. I don't think I need to link it in the podcast notes necessarily. Let's go to steamspy.com.
The one at the very top of the list is Simple Ball Extended Edition, which had 51 reviews before, and now it has 7. And previously I had a user score of 88, and now has a user score of 14. So,
yeah,
bit of a drop there. I've been looking through this list, and there's a lot of games that I either don't recognise or I kind of recognise. I've seen the name when combing through Steam, but it hasn't clicked with me for whatever reason. Although I did have to look up I Am Caligula when I saw that on the list.
Is that game as good as it sounds?
You tell me, judging by this screenshot, which I'm assuming you are going to stick in the podcast notes.
Wait. Okay, I've seen this screenshot before.
Really?
That's weird. Where the hell have I seen this?
I don't know. Apparently,
yeah. I'll link this, but I'll also describe it. There's a two anime-ish looking women. I mean, they have massive eyes.
Two cartoon women with massive eyes, yeah. On what is possibly a bed. I think it's
it
a
looks
bed.
Like a bed. They're wearing sort of nightwear. One of them is negligees. Yeah, sure. One of them is a brunette. She's in blue. The other one's blonde. She's in red and is kind of... So the one in blue is kind of sat on the bed and the one in red is kind of over her, I guess.
Straddled over her, grabbing her face with both hands.
And presumably the blonde lady is Drusilla, who is talking. And she says, tell him to stop wearing my panties on his head.
Which is a very Caligula thing.
tell him to stop making his horse into a general. It'll be a Caligula thing.
I'm not sure who decided that Caligula was a really good idea for an RPG maker game, but...
I think they were right, though.
Well, in fairness, I cannot disagree. They say that this will be the most in-depth, story-driven game about Caligula ever made, and they're probably right. I can't think of any other games about Caligula. That might be why.
No, don't think so. I don't think he might have popped up in one of the Total War Rome games at some point, but he wasn't a big part of those games.
I have to say, it does hurt. Yeah, I mean, they're not story-driven games about Caligula. It does have...
No, they're not, no.
Its feature list is the sort of thing that makes me cringe, though. Because its feature list is the sort of thing where you worry because this is all they could think to put in the feature list. Okay.
It's got pictures, also text.
I will grant you, right? Okay. Two of them, not too bad. Historical weapons and armor to equip your party with. Right, fair enough. Historical. Sure. Voiceovers at key story events. Okay. For an indie game, that's all right. Then we have RPG level progression. Which I'd kind of expect that from an RPG. Then we have quest system, and directly
they should have opened with the quest system. I always want to know if there's a quest system.
Directly after that, the final feature is press F5 to change screen size.
Yeah, that's desperate stuff.
I'm going
to
be honest.
The audio options to change how loud the music is.
I feel bad about sort of mocking things like this, but in this case, no.
It might be good. Maybe they're just not good at recognizing their own. You know, maybe they're just very humble and they're not good at recognizing which features they should. You know, they're bad at talking about themselves. They don't know what to highlight as exceptional about their game. They feel bad about it, so they're underplaying it. You know, they're underselling things.
Well, it has mixed user reviews, although all of the ones listed as most helpful are negative.
Oh dear.
And one of the positive reviews says, "Good news for people who like bad games. If you aren't burned out on RPG Maker fails, this might be a good one to get you there."
Oh. Seems harsh. I just noticed Mighty No. 9 is on this list of on this spreadsheet list.
Really?
Yeah,
that's interesting. Because I would imagine a lot of the people who got keys from that would be the people who bought it on Kickstarter or backed it on Kickstarter.
Yeah. I have to go back to the top to figure out. So that's the score for that actually went up. I think.
Oh right.
By 8.
Yes.
So not a lot, but.
No, it went from an average of 52 to 60. Yes. Presumably, yeah, that would be because the keys that people got for free would have largely been Kickstarter ones.
Yeah.
Which is I'm
kind of interested. Go on, sorry.
Is that where we possibly hit a bit of a problem with this? In that Kickstarter reviews are probably legitimate rather than
I don't see why they wouldn't be. I mean, and unless you're just dicking around, obviously, which some reviews clearly do.
Yeah.
The Valve don't seem to mind, by the way. The only thing they were upset about was that people were putting their comedy reviews and listing them as helpful rather than funny. They don't really like that. I'm interested in the ones that the games whose score has like massively increased. Because the ones where it's massively decreased, you kind of think, right, well, you just had a bunch of probably fraudulent reviews. That's pretty simple to figure out. But look, there's one called Elves Adventure.
Yeah,
that's increased from 28 to 80.
Yeah.
It's gone from a pile of shit to amazing.
It's lost 69 reviews, though. It's gone from 74 reviews to 5.
Yeah.
I'm looking this one up. I like that the one directly above that on the list is the Troma Project, which should tell you everything you need to know. Okay,
yeah,
elves,
I guess with Elves Adventure, they've just culled every single review except the 5 people who legitimately bought it through Steam and enjoyed it.
Actually, yeah, there's a point. The game, apparently Elves Adventure has been in 3 bundles and is in 1 now.
Right.
So presumably bundle reviews are also excluded from this because they
are
external keys.
Yeah, they will be, because that's keys, isn't it?
Too
as well, Tim. We get all our code through keys.
Yeah, but now, we don't review things on Steam, Peter.
Now our reviews won't count. We do when that guy nicks them and just puts them on there.
This is true.
As his own opinions. that's not really it's not really something we support, though.
Apparently, the Troma Project was a game that was made in 2001. But it was never released.
How is it on Steam if it was never released?
Well, presumably never released until now. Toxic Avenger and so on and so forth. This looks weird. Turn-based strategy.
Game 388 is just called Pizza Express. Is that the popular UK-based pizza chain?
I think I know what that one is, actually.
Putting a game on Steam.
Is this the one I think it is? Oh no, it's not. Never mind.
No.
That's become very positive now.
How do you feel about Pizza Express, Tim? I think they're quite good. The pizzas aren't massive, but they're pretty good.
They're not bad. I was kind of annoyed when I had to leave Bridgewater directly after finding one of the best pizza places I've ever been to.
What was that? Was it an independent one?
Yeah, it wasn't a chain or anything. It was just a local. Yeah. It was, if anything, actually, it was like a late night takeaway. It was basically a kebab shop, but they did really good pizzas. Their pizzas were among the best I have ever had, and I eat a lot of pizza all over the world.
Were they adding some sort of magical addictive spice?
They might have included cocaine, I'm not sure, but I'm not ruling it out.
Did you feel quite energetic after eating one of their pizzas?
No,
and also quite confident in your own abilities all of a sudden?
I normally felt quite fat and bloated.
Right, probably not Coke then.
Sorry, I'm still stuck on the Troma Project. I kind of want to play this game. It's a Troma game with lots of live-action video footage, and it's a turn-based strategy game. How? Why have I not played this?
I don't know. Maybe it's because of its poor reviews on Steam, which have now switched around into being a bit more positive.
Yeah. Okay, some of the positive reviews are maybe not the best. Watch the intro, game locked up when I press new game, 10 out of 10, it's Troma. Which in fairness is...
I think that's the sort of review Steam are trying to cut down on.
Lloyd Kaufman's Jagged Alliance slash Fallout.
Should we talk about some games we've actually played rather than ones we would like to play? Unless there's other amazing news stories we can discuss. I can't.
I don't know. Really. There been any of the news things?
As a PSA, if you bought a GTX 970 in the US any point in the last couple of years, yeah, you can get a bit of money back for it.
No, in the US, I'm fucked on this deal.
Afraid so. They only lied to people. Well, sorry, no, they admitted no fault. They only didn't lie to people, but are giving money away anyway to people in the US. Back in Europe and Asia and any other continents, they're not. But yeah, so, you know, there you go. What's something? We both played Pac-Man Championship Edition 2.
Yeah, that's a weird one for you.
We could talk about that.
We could talk about that. Everyone wants to know all about the Pac-Man.
Absolutely, they do. So I didn't play the previous Championship Edition or DX Plus or whatever the other one was called.
I did.
So I have played Pac-Man, obviously.
I played both Championship Edition and DX, which was the sort of improved re-release, I think.
Can you remember the last time you played Pac-Man at an arcade cabinet?
Sometime in the 80s, probably.
All right. I was at a wedding in Colorado last year, and the hotel had a Pac-Man arcade cabinet. So I had a game of Pac-Man. It was pretty good.
I do remember when I was in... Oh, it was a school trip. We went to the Lake District.
Yeah.
And the hotel we stayed in, or the hostel or whatever it was, had a
couple
of...
That's a classic school trip location, the Lake District.
Oh, it really is. But it had a couple of arcade machines downstairs. It had, I can't remember whether it was Daytona USA or Sega Rally, but it was one of those. And it also had Puzzle Bobble. And we used to...
Oh, nice.
We just played a fucking shit ton of Puzzle Bobble.
Was that the purpose of the school trip?
As far as
teach you about arcade machines.
Like, as far as three or four of us were concerned, yes, it was all about the Puzzle Bobble tournaments. And then occasionally you'd like go out and do some walking and like mark down where businesses were because it was geography.
Do and some orienteering, maybe bit of map reading.
Not really. This is school geography, not actual geography. So it's not so much about maps or anything like that. It's like, oh, where are the businesses? How does this, you know, it's like infrastructure and the growth of towns and stuff, which I wouldn't really call geography. Human.
Yeah, wasn't that like human geography or something? But it was economics. That's what that part of geography was.
Pretty much. But then again, geography, like in schools over here at least, has always been kind of a weird mix of geology, sociology, economics, and various other bits and pieces.
Yeah, I remembered learning about just Italy in general at one point, which was cool. Like, I like, you know, it's good. It's good Italy knowledge. But, it's wide-ranging. It's not just geological in nature.
And then history, of course, was just the Industrial Revolution forever.
Well, World War II. Did you not do World War II?
We did get a bit of World War II, but it was mostly the Industrial Revolution forever. And occasionally a bit of the War of the Roses, although mostly focused on remembering the names of people rather than any of the interesting stuff.
That's the history of Britain. It's the Romans, then the Battle of Hastings, then Industrial Revolution, then World War II. Yeah. And then you're pretty much up to date.
And you've got the War of the Roses in there as well.
Yeah, sure. That's important. You have to learn what Game of Thrones is based on.
Yeah.
so that's important to learn.
It is.
So Pac-Man, I suppose. getting back to Pac-Man Championship Edition 2. This has been kind of...
Does anyone care about Pac-Man?
Yeah. Okay. Loads of people do.
Okay.
Look, he's an icon. Right, so I opened my review by saying, oh, he's one of those iconic characters that most people would recognize. I actually tested this. I asked my parents whether they knew who Pac-Man was, and they did.
That's granted. He is an iconic character. I don't know whether he's quite the sort of iconic character who can sell millions of copies by having a game with Pac-Man on it, though.
No. Well, I mean, he's been in quite a lot of games at this point. a lot of them quite similar, and a lot of them like Pac-Man Adventures or whatever. What's that one that he plays on Game Center CX where Pac-Man has to go hang gliding?
Yeah.
What was that shit about?
Yeah.
That was very strange. And he's got a really stereotypical, like, nagging wife and annoying children.
Yeah,
it's all quite strange.
Ms. Pac-Man kind of... She's changed since she got married.
She's a ballbuster. Seriously, what happened? It's very, very strange state of affairs.
Anyway, Pac-Man Championship Edition 2 is a bit more like regular Pac-Man in that it is top-down and you have Pac-Man going around a maze picking up pills and annoying ghosts.
Controversially, though, the ghosts don't kill you on touch.
No, you have to piss them off first.
Which seems kind of, I don't know, it's almost like that's your fault when they come and get you later, really.
It's like they are just sort of wandering around the levels by themselves, and if you bump into them...
Doing ghost business.
Yeah, if you bump into them like 5 or 6 times, you smack them into the air, and then they sort of drop down onto the ground somewhere else a few seconds later, and at that point they're pissed off and they're chase after you and try and...
It's basically like walking down the street and just... bumping into someone until they fall over, or you push them into the road or something.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to be upset.
Yeah,
they're going to come after you.
Pac-Man is a dick in this game.
Basically,
it's all those pills.
It is all, they had to take a toll eventually, didn't it? I feel like this isn't necessarily the most incisive commentary on Pac-Man Championship Edition 2.
It's
you're likely to get.
Well, it's divided up primarily into two modes. You've got adventure mode, which I played for about 5 minutes and decided it was very boring and I didn't want to play it anymore.
It wasn't that bad.
Adventure mode is kind of a time attack thing where you have to complete courses in a set amount of time. That's basically...
I thought adventure mode was good practice for the score attack bit where this is getting into the mechanics a bit more, I suppose. There's a point at which you eat the power pill, and then in traditional style you have to eat the ghosts, but basically they're massive like trains, ghost trains, and you have to kind of head them off because you can only eat them by getting the very head of the train. And so in adventure mode, like you basically don't have much time to do this, so it gets you pretty good at eating them as quickly as possible, which you need to do to set good scores in the score attack mode. So for that, at least, it's quite useful.
Yeah, I mean, score attack gives you 5 minutes, and then you basically have to get as many points as you can in that period, as score attack implies. But yeah, score attack is where the meat of the game is for me. There are, I think about 10 different courses?
There are, yes, 10.
And they're split between 3 different difficulties. You've sort of got baby's first game mode where there's only one.
You've got the boring difficulty.
Yeah.
the good difficulty and the stupidly hard difficulty.
Yeah, you've basically got boring, normal, boring, way it's meant to be played, and really fucking hard.
Yeah.
I actually quite like really fucking hard difficulty, I've got to be honest.
Yeah, no, I do too, because there's a chance. I mean, on regular difficulty, I'm always going to finish the course. Whereas on extreme, I'm not necessarily going to do so, and I think that that adds more of a more of a thrill.
Extreme. The only difference between that and regular, the difference between regular and really boring mode. Really boring mode only has like a maximum of 1 ghost train, whereas regular has 4.
The usual crowd.
Extreme is exactly the same, except it is running at about 2 to 3 times the speed. You will piss off ghosts the instant you touch them, so you can only bump into them once before they start chasing after you, and no extra lives spawn on the field, which kind of forces you to get really used to the mechanics, the different bits and pieces that it throws at you, like the ghost escape routes and things like that.
Yeah. Well, it has a few little... I mean, I don't know if these were in Championship Edition as well, but you've got these like bombs you can deploy which will pop you back to the start of the level and also near the like a safe spot that you can go and hide in for a bit if you need to, because the ghosts calm down after a little bit.
Yes.
So if you've pissed off all four of them and it's going at hyper speed and you just want to hang out somewhere safe for a while, yeah, then you actually might want to do that. And you also have a brake. Pac-Man can stick the brakes on, which sometimes you want to do, because once you have these massive ghost trains trawling around, they can take up quite a lot of space. And rather than bumping into them, you might just want to let them go past.
Yeah.
Or, you know, just obviously just wait for a while for some movement to die down and then carry on your way. And if you approach a corner, if you input the direction that you want to go in ahead of turning the corner, you'll do it more quickly.
Yeah, Pac-Man. Well. Pac-Man sort of slides against the wall with sparks coming out, and yeah, then he turns the corner more quickly and gets a bit of a speed boost when you go around it.
A question. So have you figured out like what the best strategy is for score attack? Because I haven't quite... Because, right, you get a combo for eating the dots,
yeah,
all the way up to 500 per dot.
Yeah.
If you don't eat them all on a level, then you'll suffer a penalty when you go to the next one.
Yeah.
I haven't figured out if it's ever worth leaving some in play but getting the fruit, which gets you quite a few points, and just getting to the next level faster, or whether it's... I guess it's situational. If, like, the ones you have left are, like, way in a corner...
I haven't... I did wonder about this. I haven't really analysed it. I would say that, yeah, it's usually best to always get the pills because the penalties are harsh. On right, the levels where you get a power pill and have to chase the ghosts around, though, you can safely leave a few of them because you might well run over them while you're chasing the ghosts anyway.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I generally went for everything. Except once or twice on extreme, where it was just no. There was like two it's or three out of the way. On. No, yeah. I'm moving on.
Well, because the other thing is, if you take the risk, because if you lose a life, then it resets your
yes,
pill munching combo to zero. So you definitely don't want that to happen.
And that is,
any circumstances.
Yeah, that's the thing. The pills give you a lot of points. It's not a great deal. Compared to, you know, I mean, you get thousands for eating a ghost train, tens of thousands.
Yep.
But when you consider that, like, the first pill you pick up is worth 1 point, the second is worth two, the third is worth three, when you've got that combo chain up to 500, at that point it does start to add up quite a lot.
Yeah, and I mean, if one piece of fruit is worth, like, 9,000, well, okay, but that's only, like, 16...
Yeah,
or so of the others if you're a max combo. So
exactly,
yeah.
It mostly comes down to the ghost trains in terms of getting the points. I think that's where the majority of your points come from. Which was the same in Pac-Man Championship Edition, which I keep meaning to go back and play so that I can work out the differences.
But that's why I wonder though whether it's sometimes better to zip through the levels as fast as possible to get to the power pill level.
It might
where
be.
You then have the Where you then have the ghost trains, you see. That's I ran tests either way, and I it wasn't conclusive. Really, I tended to get similar-ish scores. I think I got the highest ones when I tried to clear every stage. So,
well, the other thing is, when you clear a stage, is you also get an extra bomb, and that gives you an extra 1,000 points when you finish
at the end.
Which again isn't a great deal, but adds up.
Is it 1,000 or is it 10? It's 10,000.
It's 10,000 per life, 1,000 per bomb.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
So yeah, not only does.
But you could have stashed like 20 odd by the end, though. So that is relatively.
Yeah. It has made the difference for me between an A rank and an S rank.
You've got an S rank. I never got an S rank.
I've got an S rank on extreme, Peter.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I don't think that's too hard exactly. I mean, it's hard to clear extreme, but extreme goes so very, very quickly that if you clear it, you're going to be within breathing distance of an S rank.
Yeah, true. Yeah. Good point.
I like it. It's a nice arcadey take. I mean, that was what they did with Pac-Man Championship Edition. Was they basically took Pac-Man and went, you've all done the thing where you go around the maze and pick up the pills and it's quite boring.
Yeah.
Let's make it more exciting. Let's make it more like there's a course that you, a perfect course that you have to follow, but things will happen that get in the way. You need to adjust on the fly. You're building up massive ghost trains and those will give you shitloads of points. And ideally, you don't want to fuck this up. You don't want to,
I think it was. I think in Championship Edition, you could pick up a power pill before sort of finishing the level. But ideally, you wanted to have a massive ghost train, have every ghost on the level in one big train before you picked it up for right. maximum points and so on. Yeah. But it's been so long since I've played it. But yeah, they've managed to actually make it an entertaining game, not just Pac-Man again, which you see a lot. It's something, it's familiar as being Pac-Man, but it plays very differently in a good way.
I feel like the sequel managed that as well. I mean, I didn't play the first Championship Edition. Yep. I know I've seen some people who have maybe not liking this one as much. That might be a symptom of, well,
yep,
they tried to do it again and they used most of their best ideas for the first one. So.
No, I mean, this is different enough to Championship Edition 1 that it's worth picking up. I just don't think it's as good as Championship Edition 1. I think that was a tighter experience in general. I felt that worked better.
There are some decisions here that could definitely be questioned, you know, like the bumping into ghosts thing. I mean, that... It kind of all ties into the same mechanic. You kind of have to be able to not instantly die from the ghosts due to the fact that when all four of them have got massive trains, they're taking up huge portions of the level. So therefore, they have to come up with this other thing, you know, so... Which I think works okay.
Yeah, it does. I'm just trying to remember how the hell this worked in the original. Because I've got a sneaking suspicion you had, like, the ghosts... chasing you.
I saw some footage of the first one. It seemed like you had this kind of like bullet time thing almost.
It did when you were about to bump into a ghost that happened. Yeah, that's right. You basically had the ghosts chasing you and you needed to build up as big a chain as you could, sort of like Snake, where they were all sort of just following behind you and you needed to run around and wake up all the sleeping ghosts by running next to them. And ideally not pick up a power pill until you had an absolutely massive chain and simply couldn't avoid it.
Right.
So that you could combo a shitload of ghosts together. That was what you wanted to do, ideally. In this, it's a little bit different. This has the ghost trains don't just chase you around like in Snake. They have their own little movement patterns. And when you pick up a power pill, they run along these little escape routes, which are basically they run around on rails and they will always try to take a rail that gets them further away from you, so you kind of need to head them off at the pass.
You've got to figure out which
yeah,
oh man, and fuck that level that has all the jumping portals on it.
That is the second level you unlock in Score Attack, and to my mind it is the hardest level in the game.
It is absolutely the hardest level. Because I mean, it makes an effort to show you where you're gonna come out of each portal every time, but by the time you're on the end, you know, sort of penultimate and finale levels, where the speed is absurd, and sometimes they don't, you know, it's not like you go in this portal and it comes out parallel.
Yeah, usually
it might send you like much higher or something.
Usually it's like it's horizontal, it'll move you to, but on a few of the stages of that level, it will bounce you in a diagonal direction, and if you haven't paid attention to where you're going. And considering you need to be reacting constantly once it starts going really, really fast, you might well not, because you don't have time to think. It can just completely mess you up. I like Championship Edition 2. I like Championship Edition DX more, but I've had fun with 2. I have to say as well, one thing you didn't mention in your review is that's really good music.
Mm. Yeah, music's all right.
I love some of the music. Track 6 in particular, I think, is the one that I now use on every single level. It was like something out of... It reminded me of Jet Set Radio.
That's worth saying, actually, that it's got some quite nice customization. Like, for every level you do, you can change the style of the maze and the sort of graphical style of the ghosts to some of the ghost styles that Pac-Man has employed through history. And as you said, you can choose the music track too.
You can also change the camera to weird isometricness if you really want to confuse yourself.
Yeah, you can. If you're some sort of weird masochist that wants to make it harder for yourself for some reason, you can do that too. I think we've covered Pac-Man. Yeah. In exhaustive detail.
I think we've covered it far more than anyone expected. Least of all
good,
me.
That's what I like. I like to surprise people on the podcast. I could have opened with like talking about the FIFA demo or something, but that would have been too predictable. No, go with Pac-Man.
And now you're going to talk about the FIFA demo and Alex Hunter.
Alex Hunter's magical journey. I will talk a bit about that because it's the new story thing that they've put into FIFA, and I find it interesting when worlds collide like this and you get a little bit of Mass Effect in your FIFA for some reason. The demo lets you play basically one match. It's your debut. In the demo, he's playing for Manchester United, but that's, I think, just for demo purposes. I'm pretty sure you can go in any... Yeah, damn right, boo. I think you can be in any Premier League team in the actual game. So one thing I instantly noticed that was... I should have realised, obviously. It's obvious. Jose Mourinho, of course, his face is in the game. But he never actually talks to you, even though he's the manager of Manchester United. You get generic coaching man delivering the team talk and the instructions and stuff.
And you'll occasionally see surreal 3D Mourinho walk past and do sort of jazz hands and then walk off again.
Yeah, kind of. You start off your debut on the bench, and then you get a bit of cutscene stuff from what's happening in the game, and then it cuts to Mourinho kind of quietly whispering to generic coaching man, and then generic coaching man comes over to you and actually delivers the like, yeah, right, we're gonna put you on, son. Good luck. Get all the kickball points, lad, on me head. And of course they do this because like you can be at any Premier League team, and there's no way even EA can't bring in every single Premier League manager and get them to deliver team talks.
Well,
that would be insane.
I'm assuming it won't be any Premier League team. It'll presumably be the ones that they announced they had the managers for.
I think they have every Premier League manager.
Do they? Have they licensed
them? Yeah, I know they only went through the famous ones.
Right,
I think they have all of them.
Okay.
I mean, the lesser known ones probably won't look like their actual faces, if I know FIFA. But
if I know FIFA, the better known ones probably won't look much like their actual faces.
Yeah, Mourinho's looking a bit odd in this. I mean, it's obvious who it is, but... anyway, so basically the arc of the little bit you play through is you and your mate Gareth Walker, who by the way is a complete bell end. It's very, very obvious that like fame is going to go to his head, and he's gonna abandon you and do stupid shit. He's obvious prick that he is.
He's going to be the rival.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. So he gets picked ahead of you to start with, and he scores a goal in the game. But then it's like, all right, you're getting the last 20 minutes to come on and try and win the match, which is at 1-1 at the point you're brought on. Obviously, the setup is that you come on and score a goal on your debut and win the game. Hooray. And then you give your interview at the end where it's like, yeah, it was great. The boy's done good. I'm so thrilled. There are repercussions to the dialogue options, by the way.
Oh, you can choose what to say. Nice.
You can have fiery or icy responses to things.
Can you romance the reporters?
I hope so.
Is this massive FIFA act?
I really hope it is. It doesn't seem like it, but I hope so. And there's also like a third, it's like a balanced scales, totally boring, non-committal response. But when you give these responses, it pops up things in the corner like your standing's improved with the manager, or like you've got more followers and stuff like that.
Mourinho will remember that.
yeah, basically. If you're too arrogant and sort of talking about how great you are, then the manager gets pissed off. But the fans love it. So Anyway, after playing it properly, I decided to test how reactive this was going to be to see what would happen if I had like the worst debut possible. So basically, I got the ball as often as possible and ran towards my own net and scored own goals as often as was humanly possible and scored about 5, basically. the game didn't really seem to be able to cope with this at all. There was like one mention of it on my post-match report. It was something like, "It's really unfortunate that you put the ball in your own net. You should try and concentrate more," or something like that. But some of the other stuff was still really positive. Like, oh yeah, you know, you put in some good tackles, so you showed some good movement in the game. It's like, I scored 5 own goals. We lost 7-2. What? Why is nobody talking about this?
Right.
And then in the interview afterwards as well, they just like if this happened in real life, that's the only thing the interviewer would be asking about. But they just completely ignore it. This is very bizarre. I'm just stood there going like, why aren't you asking me about the obvious massive elephant in the room here? So yeah. That, bit disappointing.
I have to say that's actually more reactive than I was expecting. And also possibly less, because on the one hand I was half expecting that it was basically score a goal in the last 20 minutes or you fail and have to retry the level.
No, you can just have a reasonable match and it ends 1-1 or something. It'll still progress.
That interests me because the last time they tried to do this was with one of the Fight Night games and it went a bit wrong, and that was very much a case of you have to do exactly what we say or you lose. Right, and have to do it again.
I mean if you're consistently bad for like 10 games or something, it might suddenly start going, look, your place in the team is in danger because you're not very good. And then that might end with a game over or something, but
I guess it might also. I can't quite think of. I've totally forgotten what I was going to say.
Well, what I was hoping from the own goals stuff. I mean, look, to be fair, to score 5 own goals, you have to be losing your mind and doing it on purpose. So the fact that it registers that you might have scored 1 by accident that's fine. That's fair enough. I did kind of hope that the post-match interview would register that my team rating was like 3 out of 10 and reflect that and kind of say, look, obviously this wasn't a very good debut. You know, are you hoping for better next time kind of thing? But it didn't have that at all, which I thought that was a bit of a shame.
Well, did you try it differently, where you simply just tried not to touch the ball? You did absolutely nothing for the entire game.
I haven't. I should try that. I should also try getting sent off or something. That's quite hard, but it's quite easy. You just run up to the opposition goalkeeper and scythe him down.
I was going to say, I miss the days when you had a sort of a dedicated foul button and the dedicated dive button as well.
Yeah. I remember. Yeah, they did have a diving button for a while. That was weird times.
Yeah. Of course, that was back when FIFA wasn't the respectable institution it is now.
Well, yeah, naturally. I also remembered the other day that the World Cup 98 FIFA game had Chumbawamba's Tub Thumping as its main theme, which is just about getting fucking pissed and falling over.
You know, I actually remember that. I don't know how I remember that, but I do.
I really don't think that would happen now.
Must have been one of the days I was round a mate's house playing whatever the hell they had to hand. Yeah, I remember that. Although my fondest memories of football games are still Pro Evolution Soccer 3, in which I would take Saudi Arabia and I would win. It didn't matter who my opponents picked, I would win with Saudi Arabia. They learned to fear Al Glorb, because whenever I'm assuming it's actually like Al Glorb or something like that, but it was just one word in the game, it was just Al Glorb. Mate, he was one of the...
Like he's from space.
He was one of the substitutes, and if I was losing, I'd always bring him on in the second half, and he'd score about 3 goals. He was brilliant.
He's your Alex Hunter.
Yeah.
Alex Hunter.
It was all about Al Glob for me.
Anyway, I do quite like this journey mode, because it just kind of adds a bit of purpose and drama, I suppose, to, because you could always do the be a pro mode where you would play as an individual player and you'd sign to a club and you'd get given goals to achieve and stuff, but it was all a bit bland and menu based, you know. It wasn't really about the most you'd get as an email from the manager going, yeah, well played, good job. So like actually having a bit of a narrative structure around that stuff is pretty good. And if it turns out to be hilariously melodramatic, so much the better.
That was we talked about this briefly before, but yeah, one of the things that I really liked about Need for Speed was the fact that it was an absurdly melodramatic thing with lots of live action stuff. It was cheesy and terrible, and I fucking loved it.
I'm fine with that. If Alex Hunter needs to score a hat-trick in the last game of the season to raise money to save his dying father or something, then whatever, that's fine with me.
Yeah, his
I'm up for it.
The rival character has kidnapped his dog, and you have to deliberately lose a match.
Yes, that's right. But or, what will you
or
do?
You won't get your prostitutes and drugs back. Wait, no.
I don't think it's going to mention prostitutes and drugs. I don't think the officially licensed FIFA game is going to accurately portray the world of drugs and prostitution surrounding all FIFA executives.
I hope that Dan Marshall's allegedly. Kickmen, or whatever the hell it's called, does.
Oh, that one.
Actually, it does, because we've seen snippets of the script from
we've
that.
We've seen the script, yeah.
That does.
Is that called Enter the Kickmen or something?
Yeah, I just know it as Kickmen.
Don't know if that's a game name or an instruction or what, but
yeah. I'm hoping both.
Me too. That's FIFA 17. Look, go read my demo impressions thing for thoughts of things outside of journey mode. It's not massively different. Big surprise, but it's made some good changes as well. Also not particularly surprising. Yeah. Tim, what you played recently that can compete with the might of Alex Hunter?
Well, I did play a bit of Dead Rising, which is 10 years old.
Of course.
Although it's 10 years old, newly released.
Dead Rising, of course, telling the heroic tale of journalists at Frank West. Yes. Giving journalists their due at last.
He has covered wars, you know.
so he says.
Oh, I'm so pleased I managed to only get one reference to that into the article.
That was the screenshot, no less.
Yeah, I did also have it in the tagline, but I figured I could get away with that. It's on the one hand a really good port, and on the other hand a really worrying port. It supports 4K resolutions. It runs at a million frames a second. It's really well optimized.
Does it actually run at a million frames a second?
From what I can gather, it supports monitors up to 144 hertz in terms of refresh rate. Yeah, so presumably it will support like 120 frames a second, but obviously I can't test this. Likewise, I can't test 4K resolution, though I did play it in whatever the hell twice, double 1920x1080 is. 31 something.
If you can downsample and it allows you to select it, then it pretty obviously supports 4K.
Yeah. It's got decent keyboard and mouse controls, all redefinable, and other than that, it's basically the same game, and that's good. The downside is that it's got horrific negative mouse acceleration and mouse smoothing.
Yeah. I was very surprised at that, because these are the same people who did the Dragon's Dogma port, I think, and that was fine. Mouse aiming for the bow and arrow, and that was fine.
Part of me wouldn't... Actually, no, okay, it's definitely deliberate, but part of me wonders if it's actually intentional, like with Resident... like with Resident Evil 4's sort of ridiculously close-up over-the-camera view thing that prevents you from seeing half of the screen. It's kind of a deliberate thing to give more weight to the feeling of swinging the camera around and give the game a bit more of a ponderous feel, because, you know, it is
much as it's an action survival beat 'em up thing, you're not the Frank isn't the fastest guy in the world. It's not a super speedy hack and slasher or anything like that. So I kind of wonder if it's deliberate in that sense, but it's still really annoying, and I would prefer not to have it. Thank you. Slightly,
well, like have it as an option, you know, and kind of highlight, look, we did this for balance reasons, but you can turn it off if you want. I mean, it's a single player game, for God's sake.
Yes, unlike the unlike its sequels, all of which have multiplayer. But yes, this is purely solo. The other problem I had with it, and to be honest, I kind of got used to the negative mouse acceleration, so on and so forth, pretty quickly, but I do get used to that stuff most of the time. It's only if it really makes aiming a complete ball ache that I have problems with it. The other slightly larger problem is that it's got some serious issues with saving the game, insofar as it managed to corrupt my save file once and I had to start again. I meant to edit the article to basically point out with a disclaimer that obviously I've only tried this on my computer. And much as I've seen that other people have this problem as well, there is no way of knowing how widespread it actually is.
Right. If you have it, you're probably going to report it, but yeah.
Exactly. You're not going to hear from the thousands of people who aren't experiencing it. But on the other hand, I can only talk about my own experience, and based on the fact that it's got this save issue and I don't know what the hell is causing it, and I don't really want to play this, frankly, quite demanding, arduous game, which forces you to think about when and where to save. I don't really want to play that when there's the possibility of just sort of immediately losing progress through, you know, the fact that the planets are in a certain alignment. So, yeah, I kind of hold off on it for that reason alone. Which is a shame, because I really like Dead Rising. I played it a hell of a lot back on the Xbox 360 on a CRT TV with all tiny text that was impossible to see. it's a really divisive game, because a lot of people really hated the timer mechanic. They hated having only one save slot. They hated the fact that you're not expected to start it up and then go through the whole 72 hours of the story and win the game. You're expected to start it up and probably die around about hour 15 or 16, if not sooner, and then restart from scratch with the levels that you've earned as you level up throughout the game by taking photos.
Right.
And so you'll restart with
I mean, a bit roguelike, I guess.
Yeah, a little bit.
In terms of, you know, you like starting with equipment that you earned in your previous run.
It's not sort of randomly generated or anything like that, but you will learn where decent weapons are, where the books that increase durability are, and so on. You'll learn which quests you need to undertake quickly, which ones you can safely ignore for a while, and so on and so forth. You learn better, safer routes around them all. And, you know, that kind of, that worked for me, because I like that sort of gameplay, whereas a lot of people, I think, were just expecting an sort of A to B open world, beat up the zombies, finish the game, you're a hero. Which it definitely is not. It's got a really strict timer, and finishing the game without letting any of the sort of civilians die is next to impossible. Simply down to timing, let alone the fact that the AI is horrendously stupid. But the AI is horrendously stupid.
They moved away from that for each subsequent release, really, didn't they? I mean, Dead Rising 2 and 3 are a lot less time related.
Yeah.
4's gonna be similar.
I think 4 has removed the timer entirely.
I know 3 had it, but it was basically irrelevant unless you really dicked around forever.
And 2 was pretty similar. You know, I mean, things would happen at different times. Like, different quests would pop up at different times and so on and so forth. But the only thing that you really had to do was get the Zombrex back to your daughter. That was kind of the important thing that you had to do. But yeah, this was the hardcore one, if you like.
And also recruit the tiger. That was very important in Dead Rising 2 as well.
Dead Rising 2 was a really good game as well. I love the multiplayer for Dead Rising 2, actually. Not the co-op, but the game show. I can't remember what it's called. But the game show was fucking brilliant.
I don't know if I ever did. I played it when it was free. It was a free game on 360 at some point. I don't know if I played the multiplayer at all.
It had a co-op mode where you could play with one other person. And Dead Rising 4 will apparently allow for four people. Which is going to be interesting. It had, you know how there was the game show, which was kind of the whole thrust of the main plot. You start out as a competitor. That game show formed the basis of the competitive multiplayer in that you basically played the game show. It like picked three or four rounds at random. Like you might be in a Zamboni and you had to run over more zombies than your opponents while also trying to sort of ram them off the course. Silly little events. And I think that stuff that you unlocked in that carried over into the single player as well. I can't remember the hell it was. But yeah, it was a nice little mode. It wasn't the sort of thing you would play forever, but it was really fun to just dip into
a
couple of times. I like that. I'm sort of sad that they didn't go for something like that with Dead Rising 3. And probably won't with Dead Rising 4. But as a multiplayer mode, it fit with the premise of the game.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything about Dead Rising 4's, apart from the thing you mentioned, the four-player co-op. I haven't heard anything beyond that.
Honestly, I've heard very little of Dead Rising 4, barring it stars Frank West and he's in Willamette again. And it has no timer and four-player co-op.
And that's coming to the PC, hooray.
It is. It's out, I think, December.
Yeah. Well, the Windows 10 store version or whatever is out in December, and then it'll probably come to Steam in, like, February, I think, was the implication.
I'm curious, because we do actually seem to get review code from Capcom, so I'm curious as to how this will happen, because as far as I know, we've yet to receive any review code for the Windows 10 store ever.
That is correct. I did try to get some Quantum Break code back when that was out. Either I sought after the wrong people, or they didn't want to give me any. I don't know, because we never got any.
We never heard from them. It'll be, maybe we should, isn't it, that's getting a Steam re-release at some point soonish, isn't it? Or has it already?
Yes, possibly this month, the end of this month.
Maybe I'll have a go at talking to people about that.
Have a go at talking to Littlefinger in Quantum Break.
Yes. Dead Rising, it's a really divisive game, and so I'd be hesitant to recommend it anyway, regardless of the fact that loads of people like it. There are also loads of people who hate it. But at the moment, I would suggest holding off a little while until Capcom address some of these issues.
I'm sure they will. They sorted out some of the minor things with Dragon's Dogma pretty rapidly. Some like multiplayer porn issues in that, I think.
Sorry, it took me a moment to work out what you meant.
PAWN.
The
although most of them were underage lolita looking ladies, maybe the other option too.
I had forgotten they were called that. I was just thinking companions, which I suppose is another word for escort, which is another word for prostitute. So, in that sense.
Which brings us back to FIFA. What else have I played? Oh, I played around quite. This is a while back. Played around quite a bit with the Warhammer DLC.
Oh yeah.
Added some new units to the Vampire Counts and the Empire, which was all right. It's quite good. Nothing amazingly spectacular, but some decent extra units to mess around with. I think the best addition, though, was probably Vlad von Karstein, and he was the free one. So, I can't really go wrong with controlling him. He's just massively better than everyone else, which fits. I mean, he's massively, a massively powerful vampire lord. So, hey, they gave him his whole army can do vanguard deployment, so you can basically put his army wherever you feel like it on the battlefield, which helps. Quite a lot.
That's potentially game-breaking.
Yeah. He doesn't do that in multiplayer, so that's this is quite a good way of doing it. Actually, they made him absurdly powerful for you to crush the campaign with, but in multiplayer he's powerful, but he's not quite as good.
Well, I was going to say though, even then, multiplayer, like, humans have a better chance of figuring out strategies to deal with that than the AI, who's just going to be really confused by this.
Yeah, the AI doesn't do well when you do a lot of Vanguard deployment. It doesn't do well when you run a couple of units of light cavalry around in front of its front lines, and it's like, oh shit, I've got to reorganize to face this tiny unit of pistoliers. And then you sweep into the back and kill them all. So anyway, that was all right. I'm looking forward to the Wood Elves whenever they decide to show up. Probably next couple of months or so, I would guess.
And they pop out of the woods.
So far, basically, it's because someone data mined the game. I think some Russians data mined the game and found a bunch of DLC references. And so far, the DLC pattern has pretty much followed what they found in there. So it will be Wood Elves next, and/or Britannia,
yeah.
Depending whether which one they do first, or if they release it at the same time, or whatever.
I would like to think, considering that, how interlinked really the two are, I would like to see a simultaneous release for those, but that's probably not good practice.
It could happen. Well, I don't know. I mean, like, with this most recent one, they gave away Vlad for free, alongside the two paid legendary lords, so...
I mean, they could...
I don't know.
They could do...
Britannia's a weird case because a lot of it's already in there, you know, it wouldn't be completely brand new in that sense.
True.
They'd be getting some extra units and an actual campaign to follow, but it wouldn't all be new stuff.
True. I don't know, maybe Britannia would be a cheaper one then, while the Wood Elves as an entirely new faction would be a bit pricey.
Well, no, Britannia's going to be free, they've already said.
Oh, okay.
That's... pretty set in stone, I think. All right. Whatever they do with them is a freebie.
All right, so. Well, I take it back then. In that case, yeah, I would like to see them simultaneously, considering how interlinked they are.
Me too. I'm curious what they'll do with Wood Elves about sort of... Well, obviously they're going to be very wood-based, but I'm curious to know what mechanics that will give rise to, whether you're spreading... Maybe you'll have to spread forests somehow.
It will be just like the old Dune game that Cryo made, which we took our terrifying avatars from. You have to start spreading forests all over Dune at the end.
Instead of rounding up the Fremen, you'll round up other bands of Wood Elves to rally to your cause.
Yeah.
Against Britannia and the Empire.
Yeah.
Beastmen and stuff. Probably Beastmen, I guess. Yeah.
What else? What have I played other than that? I've actually played quite a lot of stuff. I'm looking through my list at the moment, trying to work out what to mention. I will quickly mention that I played a bit of Street Fighter V again.
Oh, right. How different is it now from... It was pretty bare bones at launch.
I haven't touched the story mode. I can actually play it online now, which is nice.
And it has a story mode.
Yes,
so, I mean, that's another.
It has a story mode. It still doesn't appear to
even
have.
Even if you haven't played it, it exists.
It still doesn't have like a versus AI mode or arcade mode or anything like that, which is rubbish. But,
really?
Yeah.
That's so,
you know,
weird. Surely that would be so easy to implement.
I would think so.
I mean, if you've got the AI for the story,
well, yeah, that's
surely you can.
They've got high levels of AI anyway for things like survival mode and training mode. It's just survival mode is a horrendous grind because it only gets difficult when you get about 15 to 20 stages in.
Oh, right. So you sleepwalk your way for half an hour.
Basically.
That sounds rubbish.
Yeah, it kind of is.
Being able to play online sounds good.
It
sounds like a thing good.
It sort of is. Admittedly, I couldn't at one point, but that was because it was like 4 a.m. and so it was probably looking at all the people playing in America and was going, no, that does not fit your connection criteria.
Fair enough.
I have had a couple of incredibly laggy games with people teleporting around. And not in the good dull sim kind of way, but in the bad
right.
Hang on, you weren't there a second ago kind of way. I'm sort of annoyed at how the ranking system works, though.
If only because it seems to be totally random what it puts. Like, okay, I'm shit tier player. I'm ranked as rookie because I've played like 3 matches online. So fair enough, I'm expecting that I will probably be playing other low rank people. I mean, I think my rank is something like 480,000 in the world or something. So I was a little bit peeved when the second match I played online was against someone who was ranked about 90,000.
Yeah, that seems like a bit of a discrepancy.
Gets worse. I actually took a round off him. I was like, okay, I'm actually, you know, this is actually pretty good. It's a decent contest. Maybe it's a character he doesn't play very often. I don't know.
Sure.
But,
yeah,
you know, yeah, managed.
Not his main.
Yeah, managed a bit, held my own. Maybe it was a really good matchup for me. I don't know. Maybe my character worked really well against his. You know, I lost, and I lost a staggering number of ranking points for that, more than I actually lost for losing to someone who was below me in rank, for some fucking reason.
Whereas you would think, well, hey, you did okay against someone much higher, would count for
it. I played someone who is literally 300,000 ranks above me. And I took a round off, and I was thinking, you know, maybe I'll actually get a boost for this, because, you know,
if it's measuring, you know, per round performance or whatever.
Yeah, it's like, okay, you've actually taken a round off someone like that. Okay, you probably deserve to be slightly higher ranked than you are. I lost a shitload.
Weird.
Yeah, I kind of gave up on it at that point as well. I think the next time I came up against the same guy 4 times in a row, and that wasn't much fun.
That's no fun at all.
So yeah, it's okay. It's good. It seems like they've fixed a lot of the issues, but it also feels like the ranking system needs some serious work, and so on and so forth. Again, it still feels like it's a really solid game if you've got a bunch of people to regularly play with without lag. It might be great to sort of set up a room. I know that there are a couple of communities that have like newbie nights where they will set up a room and people can go in. And if you get sort of more than 3 wins in a row, you have to leave the room because you're probably a bit too good for it. But, you know, for people to just learn, mess about, have a bit of fun. And the actual game mechanics seem solid and so on. It's just a lot of the fluff surrounding the game doesn't seem great, which was the problem it's had since launch, basically.
Yeah.
That's a bit sad.
Where it probably came out so that they could have it around for the big fighting tournament stuff, rather than keeping it on the back burner for a bit longer.
Which is, you know, that admittedly, okay, that's where they're going to get a lot of the stuff from, is the people who compete at Evo and the people who compete online. Yeah. But it's not so great for people like me who are casual fighting game fans. I love fighting games. I play lots of them.
I mean, like you said, though, you're ranked 400,000th or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, that indicates to me that there are quite a lot of people playing this game who aren't fighting championship quality, because how could they be with that number of people?
All
right.
I played a bit of that. I uninstalled it with a bit of disappointment, to be honest. Maybe I'll go and have another go at Guilty Gear or something the next time I fancy a fighting game.
Well, you need the hard drive space for the next time Hitman patches, which will be in a couple of weeks.
I actually wanted to reinstall Grand Theft Auto 5 and have a bit of a go on that, and then I discovered that's 70 fucking gigs.
Yeah, I was going
to
say.
I need to free up a lot of space for that.
Yeah, I think I still have that installed.
What? Fuck you.
Yeah. I don't know why. I was going to say, next Hitman looks kind of interesting.
I don't know anything about it.
Okay, well, you know, we talked a little bit. It is in Colorado.
That's right. You mentioned it was like a weird compound thing.
Yeah. Well, first the rumor was it was some like Scientology compound. Then the rumor was it was an oil refinery. It is kind of a It's like a farmstead with a bunch of like right wing militia.
Okay.
Hanging out there, and it sort of looks like there's a bit of a nearby town area as well.
As long as it's...
The implication is that there's going to be more kind of sneaking around involved. Because it basically, the stuff, the blurb about it is basically like everyone is going to be hostile to 47 in this place. But I mean, presumably if you nab a disguise...
Yeah, it just won't have any... It'll be sort of like the... which one of the training missions? Well, yeah, one of the training missions was the same. The KGB Balsa Wood base.
Yeah, I like that. Like, you won't be able to sort of freely stroll around.
Yeah, there won't be there,
at least at least until you get the chief militia man's outfit and whatever.
Well, that's kind of interesting.
And it has four targets as
Oh,
well.
Jesus. Okay. This is
kind of interesting, yeah. So,
all right. That's anyway. Well, as long as it's better than the shotgun wedding level from Blood Money or the steamboat level, which was also really terrible, or the paddle steam or whatever it was.
Yeah, I preferred the wedding one to the steamboat one. Yeah. I think overall.
Yeah, I just mentioned the wedding one first because you know, that being kind of a southern town thing, it kind of fits, yeah. I guess. Although I don't know. Yeah. I don't know much about US geography, to be honest. But from what you've said, that's what it sounds like.
Right-wing militia. Colorado isn't southern, but yeah. It's just more libertarian. They don't like the government very much, so they would be predisposed to possibly just going to live in the woods with some guns, you know, as you do.
How do they feel about suited assassins working for international agencies?
Probably not great.
Okay. They think that infringes on civil liberties.
I would imagine they probably would. I imagine most people would follow along those, go along those lines. Kind of extrajudicial assassinations are tend to be frowned on by most people, even if he is killing like corrupt judges and arms dealers and stuff. Yeah. Still like, yeah, but maybe they should be put on trial rather than you just shooting them. Maybe. Just a suggestion. I don't know. But that would be a very boring game, of course, having to go through the rigorous legal process.
No, Peter, no. That would be Phoenix Wright's Ace Attorney.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, I was thinking... I was thinking more of a very real life legal simulator.
No, that would be
where all you do is read documents for about a year.
No, that wouldn't be. That's it. That wouldn't be very good.
It wouldn't be good at all.
There is a new Phoenix Wright game. It came out last week, and I've been playing that as well. But I can't really talk about that because they still haven't brought Phoenix Wright to the PC.
It's madness, Tim.
It really is.
It's as crazy as Ubisoft not bringing their Just Dance 2017 demo to the PC. But it came to every other platform, but we didn't get it, even though that game's coming to the PC.
Yeah.
Scandalous.
I wonder if we'll get review code of it.
Probably not. I'm not even really sure how's it going to work on the PC, because there's no, like, what kind of, do you need like a webcam?
They've mentioned that you can use things like, you can use like smartphones as things for it, so...
All right.
Presumably like that, I'll do that, I guess.
I'll do that then. I'll procure myself a smartphone and
excellent.
Get my Just Dance on.
I look forward to this. I have smartphones, but they're ancient, so I can't run any of these newfangled things. I'm very disappointed.
Our household has a Nexus 5 or whatever, so that's relatively up to date, isn't it?
I don't know. I don't keep up with smartphones.
It's a Google one. Anyway.
Alright, do you want to...
Anyway, I'm sure it'll work perfectly.
Do you want to hear about something incredibly... Ooh, actually, there are two other things I've played. One was the D-make of Lucius.
I'm going to have to choose because of the time, but I am interested in that. But what's the other one?
The other one was Sonny Commy.
Oh man, this is a difficult choice.
Do you know what Sonny Commy is?
No.
I'll tell you what, in case it will help you decide, I will send you a link to its Steam store page.
I was worried one of them was going to be I Am Caligula, that you'd secretly been playing through the course of this podcast.
This is probably on a par with that. There you are, Peter, yeah. If you have a look at that link and decide.
Sonny Commy. Yeah, no, let's hear about Lucius the Demon.
You don't want to hear about the photography dating simulation game thing. Okay.
Nah.
Yeah.
No pigeons, no interest. Sorry. That's my rule.
It's a good rule. That's not the only game I've played recently that has pigeon dating, actually, but I had full boyfriend. I mean, I have played another one.
Have you played Aviary Attorney?
I haven't.
I'm quite tempted by that game.
I'm sort of tempted by that, but I feel like I'll be disappointed considering how much Phoenix Wright I've played. Like, yeah, it's not going to be Phoenix Wright, despite the fact that he is an attorney and he has a bird in his name.
Yep, he does. Not a real bird, obviously. But
a mythical bird,
yeah,
which rises from the ashes, which is, you know, very thematic because all of his cases go horribly wrong until he suddenly turns them around, which is why it's called in Japan Turnabout Courtroom.
It was recently the actual date of the first murder in Phoenix Wright, wasn't it?
I don't know. Do you mean first murder in the first game, or do you mean the first chronological murder?
Of the person who's your boss initially, who then visits you in spirit form.
Okay, that's the second murder of the first game.
What's her name?
Mia Fey.
Anyway. Fey, yes. Because she's killed on, like, something of September 2016.
There are several cases that take place before that. It delves.
Right.
Well, there is one more in the first Phoenix Wright game, and then Phoenix Wright 3 has a few cases in the past.
I'm revealing my Phoenix Wright ignorance.
You need to play this series. It really needs to come to the PC because it's so fucking good.
I've played that first one.
Did you play all of it?
I think so.
The last case was so good. Anyway.
Lucius D-Make. Remind us what Lucius is, and then
Lucius is a game where you play as the son of the devil, and it's basically a simulator of The Omen, only it's incredibly janky and broken.
And it should have been an amazing Hitman style thing, but instead it was a bit rubbish.
It was very stealth heavy and very you have to do things exactly the way we want you to do them. It was sort of like if you think about the infamous level from Blood Money, the opera house one. It's the sort of thing where the only way to finish it is to plant the explosives on the chandelier and to replace the prop gun, and it doesn't tell you this.
Right.
It's a bit wonky. It's bad with its clues. The engine isn't great. It has a lot of problems. So what they did...
Which, like the son of the devil himself, it has a lot of problems.
It's sort of entertaining, but not in a particularly good way. Lucius 2 was much more entertaining. That was much more Hitman. It was also quite bad, but bad in a really entertaining way.
I recall, yes.
The Lucius D-Make basically turns it into a Commodore 64 game. Or possibly...
Now, is this made by the same people? Or...
I don't think it is, but I'm not entirely certain. I should probably check up on that.
So my next question is, do the actual creators of Lucius not care? Or is it under fair use for parody? Or...
how does this work? I'm assuming that they agreed to it if they didn't do it.
Right.
Developer and publisher are both Shiver Games. Yeah, same developer, same publisher.
Oh, okay, alright, okay.
Yeah, so they basically reworked it into a top-down... Wow, the ratings for this are weird. I didn't realise that the original Lucius has an overall very positive rating. That seems a bit off.
Strange. I should be investigating that one, Val. Get your best detectives on the case.
But yeah, apparently there was a fan art... thing that kind of demade Lucius, and they went, that's a good idea, and so they decided to actually remake it as a sort of ancient 16 color 2D pixel graphic top down adventure-y thing.
I approve of this spontaneous approach to game development.
Yeah, so do I. This is how we wind up with ridiculous shit like Far Cry Blood Dragon. So
exactly,
developers going, why the hell not?
So how does it work now that it's a top-down thing?
A lot better.
And Commodore... Oh, well.
It's significantly easier.
And significantly shorter. I think I finished it in about 3 hours, and there was only one point where I really got stuck. In fairness, I'd already played almost all of the original, so I knew most of the solutions to the puzzles, but it does hint at them quite well. It gives you a lot of clues. There was only one point where I got stuck. And I think there were hints to that lying around, which I just missed. There is a little bit of wandering around, being quite uncertain of quite what you're trying to do occasionally, but most of the time, you know what you're up to. You know who you're murdering, how. And yeah, it works quite well. The stealth stuff actually works all right, because everyone has a little flashlight in front of them, and so you just stay out of that if you're sneaking around the house at night, because obviously if you get sent to bed, it's game over.
Surely a bedroom is not enough to contain.
Well, yeah, you would think that, you know, half an hour later he'd maybe get up and try to sneak in to steal the rat poison again or something like that, but no.
Wait a minute. There's not actually anything keeping me in my bedroom other than the authority of my parents.
But yeah, it's you've got your powers. You go around and murder everybody, and it's got some. I love when you start it. It comes up with a warning saying, "Oh, this game contains graphic depictions of violence and sexual content and alcohol and so on and so forth." Mm-hmm. And it does indeed have a sex scene. Because that has to do with one of the murders it does in the original game as well. Except that in this case, the extreme graphic content is... Have you ever seen any of, like, the old porno games that came out on the Spectrum and the Commodore and so on?
Yeah,
it's basically, it's like that. But the murders, when you murder someone, you always get a picture, which is... the sort of thing. It's like a digitized, a really badly digitized photo, with some effects thrown on it, usually for blood. It's really charming. I would recommend it to people who reckon it sounds interesting. If you've got fond memories of old Speccy games and so on, then yeah, it might be worth a look. It's actually in a bundle at the moment. Although I think said bundle might be ending soon. Ends September 21st, apparently. So if you...
I'm pretty sure I'll have edited this podcast before then.
Yeah, so, it is in an Indie Gala bundle at the moment. The Delucious bundle.
Nice.
So you can get it...
That's not at all a tortured pun.
And you can get this and a bunch of other games for $3.50, apparently. Yeah,
you get the other Lucius games, or
no, unfortunately,
or is that pun relating purely to one of the games?
Purely to one of the games, I'm afraid.
Oh well,
but yeah, it's I like it. I would vaguely recommend it. It's not a game that will keep you going for a while. It'll keep you going for a couple of hours. But if you've got fond memories of playing ancient games like this on the Amstrad CPC, and you fancy trying one of them out with considerably less shit controls than you had back then. one of the other things I like, it actually has in the options, you can choose how authentic you want it to be, like whether you want CRT scan lines and like really long loading as the screens load in, and whether the scrolling is smooth or incredibly juddery and things like that.
Can you make it take 5 minutes to load with some tape cassette sound?
Sadly, no, but you can probably do that yourself if you want to.
You could, yeah, that's true. That's just a sort of homemade mod.
Well, it does. It does come up with a sort of fake Amstrad CPC prompt when you start it up, or Spectrum or Commodore 64. I can't remember which particular operating system it is, but it comes up with one of them, and it comes up with, you know, load Lucius is typed in slowly, and then it comes up with a bit of tape noise and it has the flickery background.
Very good.
It's very familiar. Yeah, it's a charming little game. It's a nice little take. It's a neat bit of entertainment for a little while. Not a fabulous game by any recommendation, but yeah, I enjoyed it.
Very good. Things that we'll be writing about in the future include Divinity Original Sin 2. Because I have an early access code for it, and that is on early access tomorrow, I think. So that's I'll be looking at that.
Is that
hopefully I can fulfill my lifelong dream of being a lizard person?
Does the early access code you have, will that activate tomorrow or will that activate before tomorrow?
I believe I can play it right now, okay. So I can get in a little bit ahead of time this evening.
Cool.
Yep, which is nice. I think that basically, like with the first original, the original Sin, I think it's the sort of first act of the game. So quite a meaty portion of the whole thing. There are some things missing. I think you can't be an undead character in early access. I think that's coming later. Oh, but,
disgusting.
You know. Sorry?
Disgusting.
I know, it's disgraceful.
Well, I mean, I think...
Frankly, I'm not sure I'm even going to write about it because of that.
I can't remember how much of Divinity Original Sin was in early access. I think it was the first act, kind of like the first big world area before you go into the forest. Yeah,
it was that whole city, town area, basically, wasn't it?
Yeah, and the
surrounding...
I think it was. I think it might have been a little bit more limited than that, but yeah, it was basically that area, or about most of that area.
Might be taking a look at the BioShock remasters to see what they've done to them on PC, if much of anything. 2K keep threatening to send me NBA 2K17. So, hey.
They did. They actually asked me if I wanted review code of that, and I don't think I responded. I was tempted to, just for the sake of doing port impressions.
I keep saying yes whenever they ask me, because... Yeah, sure.
I did. I used to follow basketball when I was younger. I was a big basketball fan when everyone else was into the football. But
you are likely better equipped to.
I doubt it. I haven't played it. I haven't.
I've played basketball at school, so I sort of know some of the rules.
I haven't followed basketball since I was like 10, so I'm not really up to date on it. You know,
I know you're not allowed to just run around holding the ball.
Yeah, no, I mean back when I was following it, Michael Jordan was a big star, and it was all about the Chicago Bulls.
I think Michael Jordan is in this.
He's in fucking Space Jam.
That doesn't mean he's in everything.
Actually, I don't think he's in Space Jam 2.
Oh,
he was in Space Jam 2. I'm sure.
I didn't know there was a Space Jam 2.
Oh, okay. It was apparently going to have LeBron James.
Right.
But apparently the director says that it's doomed.
That's always good.
The director of the first film says the sequel is doomed.
I mean, that's still not a great sign, but... anyway... Further on from that, there'll be the next Hitman, there'll be some Deus Ex DLC. Tim, you've got a code for FBI thriller.
Oh, yeah.
Twin Peaks style.
Virginia. Yeah.
Virginia.
I don't know which of us is doing that, but considering all the shit you've mentioned, I'm guessing it's me.
Probably.
Okay.
Well, it's not out for a while. No, I don't know. Yeah, it depends.
Yeah.
It depends.
I have yet to redeem that key, because we hadn't quite discussed which of us was going to do that.
Probably you, unless you've got a massive amalgam of games to also go through.
Not really. Mostly it's just
September, so maybe.
Mostly it's just surprise games popping up that demand port reviews that I keep forgetting about. Things like Dead Rising, funnily enough.
Which I got yesterday, but I was writing about FIFA, so I gave it to you.
Yep, I have been emailed about a bunch of other bits and pieces which kind of look interesting and I might look at, but I don't know, so I'm not going to mention them.
And you never know, one day we might even coax Paul back onto the podcast, and then we can find out what's happened with Paragon in the past 6 months since he was on last.
Like, I don't know about you. I've tried talking to Paul a few times. I think I've heard from him like once in the past 3 or 4 months.
Oh no, he talks to me.
I see.
You just got to be persistent.
He just doesn't like me.
You just got to be persistent. You just got to be persistent, Tim. Just ring him up. He can't stop himself from answering if you just ring him up.
That's a point. He hates typing, but if I call him on Skype, he'll answer.
Yeah, if you call him, he won't. He'll have to.
Yeah.
As long as he's there, obviously.
Yeah.
That goes for you too, listeners, if you just want to give Paul a ring. His number is... No. I'm sure he'll be thrilled when he's in the middle of an advertising meeting to get random readers going, hello. Yeah. No, it's all good. It's all good. I think he's approaching a point where he might actually have more time to be able to come back on. So.
Well, he does still appear to be following Paragon, so that's something.
He is, yeah. There you go. Paragon News, they released a new character yesterday.
I know nothing about this.
Here we go. She is a burst caster.
Okay.
Does that mean anything to you?
It does.
Is that a MOBA term, or is that
not in a Paragon sense, but I can understand what that means. Ability focused, damage focused, will do a lot of damage in a short period of time, and then can't do much of anything.
Yeah.
So, burst caster.
I think her ultimate is based on it's better if other people have less mana. It kind of does more damage the lower their mana is.
Okay,
and some of her other abilities can like steal mana from them.
So she is Outhouse Deflowerer from Dota 2 then. Outworld Devourer.
That's... I was quite happy to just assume there was a character called Outhouse Deflowerer.
It's kind of an in-joke. You never call him by his real name.
Right. It's very disrespectful to the man. Like, it's quite hurtful. Do you ever consider his feelings? How do you think he feels?
What, the Outworld Devourer? I don't know.
Yeah. I suppose he shouldn't have deflowered so many people in the outhouse if he wanted a different name, no way. That's it. That's been like an hour and a half of talking about games and PC stuff and that.
Yeah.
So,
that's good. I'm bored with this, so if you've managed to stick it out this long, well done.
Don't say you're bored. It's rule number two of podcasting. Don't like just...
All right, I'm not...
I know it's good to be authentic, but that's a bit too authentic, Tim.
I'm being...
Dial it back a
bit. Okay, two things. First, I'm being self-deprecating. That's part of the charm. And secondly...
Actually, yeah, that's good. That's another rule of podcasting.
Secondly, there is some fucking chocolate fudge cake in the kitchen, and I want to eat it.
Say no more. Goodbye, listeners. Thank you for listening.
Bye!
Silent under the dawn of that last great day.
Wish I had some chocolate fudge cake.